1.6 million Native Americans living in the 50 states, everywhere from New York City to Stevens Village. One, National News Services reaches this widespread community. It's called National Native News. Its creator and its host is Gary Fife. I'm Susan McInnes for Conversations. Join us on this edition as we talk with Gary Fife from National Native News. Welcome, Gary. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You have said that National Native News covers everything from beads and feathers to bread and butter. Break that down for me. Why those component parts?
Well, I think what you have is we are working to change things from beads and feathers to bread and butter. Most of the coverage of Native issues by our colleagues in major media tend to be rather episodic or crisis-oriented. In other words, you get lots of pictures of the powwow, perhaps, you know, all the wonderful color and movement and sound at a powwow, which is wonderful for what it is. Or if we've got a gun in our hand or a picket sign, you know, you can almost see dueling cameras there, people elbowing each other aside to get the angry Native. And that has been really unfair to our people, and it gives the major general public the idea that we're either locked into these two categories or we're non-existent. On top of that sort of thing, you can look at the coverage as it comes down, and it usually falls into about four or five kind of different storylines, and most of them tend to be sort of feature-oriented rather than hard news. Things like the drunk Indian, you know, that's been done again and again and again and again. And actually, two major journalistic awards have been given out for the drunk Indian story in the last few years, and it just really bothers me. We're that or the noble savage. We're sitting around tootling on flutes in the wood, communing with nature, or we're Native is victim, loss of culture, loss of dignity, loss of population, whatever, or now I guess some new ideas might be the noble warrior, as in the veteran, or bingo, a lot of that kind of thing. And that's what we playfully call the beads and feathers, you know, the superficial kinds of issues. And what our service tries to do is deliver the harder news that has always been lacking in coverage for Native and by Native American people. For the most part, when people ask me what do we want, where are we going, we say we want the same kinds of things everyone else in this country does. You know, a roof over your head, medical care for your kids, schools, a job. That's our primary concerns, plus the preservation of ourselves as unique cultural entities within the United States. I mean, we are proud of who we are, and we are really glad that we are distinct. We are tribes and nations rather than just sort of dark-skinned white folks. So what our service tries to do is blend a little bit of the color and the movement and the sound with some of the nuts and bolts kind of bread and butter issues and provide those in two cents. One, to our Native people who need to know this kind of stuff. And two, to our non-Native neighbors who are increasingly telling us they are interested and are really tired of being ignorant about contemporary Native affairs. In other words, we're trying to fill both of those gaps, serve a people who've never had the kind of news that really affects them, and two, try and do away with some of the misconceptions and stereotypes that you usually see or hear in major media, news, papers, radio, TV. You know, you can get lots of the beautiful Navajo, you know, scenery and the potters and the blanket weavers and things like that.
The images come right to mind when
you say
that. You got
it. And usually there's a flute underneath that, which is one of my pet peeves. You know, a lot of these people don't even use flutes. It's either that or the poor drunk lurching down the street, you know, and then collapsing and passing out and all the pitiful discussion of their tragedies. That still is true to some extent, but is not true for 90% of us.
National Native News has been on the air since 1987. Do you have This is a softball question, clearly. Do you have trouble getting news stories, or are you overwhelmed with news from Native America?
Well, at first, actually, in going back in our history, I was really intimidated. And it took me a couple of weeks to accept the job because I wasn't sure about the amount of material we could get and the quality. So I don't want to do, you know, something from Navajo every day or something from, you know, the old beads and feathers bag. We were really working very hard to teach our colleagues in the industry. And at first it was very hard because we had to teach these people that there were tribes in the area, who they were, what their concerns were, and the fact that I may not want the powwow again because I have it by the pound or by the ton. And so you should go cover their educational meeting or their sobriety movement, you know, things like this. So it was very hard in convincing reporters and news directors to give us the time and give that population some service, and they'd never been served. But luckily, in the last couple of years, things have changed to the point where we can now begin to pick and choose what we run and where it should come from and what it should say. Because we have now got a very good pool of talented people who know what we want and are opening their eyes and ears to that segment of the community and providing news on them that they'd never done before. So it's much easier now, but it was very tough at first. Many people thought I would be coming on the mic and screaming about the U.S. imperialists oppressing freedom-loving natives, you know, more after this. But we surprised the heck out of them because we, I'm obviously a Native American, but I'm also a journalist and I've been at it for 21 years and I uphold my professional ethics very highly and very strongly. And on a regular basis, we turn down stories that go white man bashing. I mean, I don't want to hear that. Many of my more radical colleagues have kind of criticized us for not going and getting the white man. And some of my more conservative friends are saying, well, you guys, you know, do too much of that. So we've got both ends of the spectrum angry at us and they're talking about us, and perhaps we're doing our job.
You're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
This is Gary Fife. He is the creator of and the host of National Native News, a news program that has been on the air daily, 5 minutes a day, on National Public Radio, now airs on 170 stations. Is that
right? Well, let's see. Actually, now we have providing a 10-minute service every day. It's the newscast,
right,
which is primarily what you will hear in this area. Plus, we combine that with a feature piece, which is a longer look at a news item of the day, or that's where a lot of cultural material, a lot of the, quote, beads and feathers, because that is just as important, too. So we will blend it to, that's where arts and literature and culture and language and music fit in. And in July, we switched our affiliation from NPR to American Public Radio. They had been after us for a couple of years and were talking about an aggressive marketing plan. And we gave it a shot, you know, go with someone who wants. And at last count, we're now on 180 stations.
And upwards.
Yeah, and I'm not done with them yet.
This is Gary Fife on Conversations. Early on, do you think you had some trouble getting stories because reporters in regions, in localities, didn't think that their stories mattered on a national scale? And has that changed? Are people getting a national consciousness? I guess that's what I'm wondering. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, I say yes to both
right.
questions. We had to tell them that, yes, we are very interested in your region, because there are Native people there that probably have never been served. And you need to change that. Even for your own local coverage, you should be serving that audience. And as a tribal people, we have always been curious about each other. You know, I'm an Oklahoma boy. I'm an enrolled member of the Muscogee Creek Nation. And, you know, the biggest thing I ever pulled out of the lakes down there, they use for bait up here, you know. And I always wondered what the Alaskan Native peoples were like, or the Lakotas of South Dakota, the Mohawks of New York, or even our kinfolk, the Seminoles in Florida. And most of our people are very curious because we have so many things in common, yet we have those vast cultural differences also. In other words, you know, my tribe didn't hunt buffalo from horseback, didn't run across the plains or anything like that. And some of those people are very curious in my tribes, who built very large cities and trading centers and stockades and temple mounds. I think we might have been first cousins of the Aztecs or something. But we have those vast differences. And as Vine Deloria pointed out in his book, Custer Died for Your Sins, mm-hmm. when you say Indians or Native Americans, you're really using a term that is equivalent to Europeans. And you know, the English are as different from the Russians as the Apaches are from the Aleuts. And so what we try to do is put across that in our service, saying each community is important. We want to hear from each part of this nation. And in doing so, we like to call ourselves a tie that binds the nation together. But many people are now saying, yeah, there are nations there. There are other tribes in the same boat we are. They've got a solution. Let's check that out. It seemed to work for them. And beginning to exchange information and actively be concerned more about each other's issues. So in that sense, we do see that nationalism sort of rising and a pride in culture. It is our delight to share the revivals of many cultures or the perpetuation and tell each other, plus our neighbors, that we're still here 500 years later, even after we've had a month of Columbus stuff, we're still here. And we're on the way up. Because I think the key there is we've put a generation of our people through college. And many of the young ones who, like me, had fiery hearts and wanted to do something for our people are going back to those situations, to the reservations or the organizations, and putting that passion and dedication to work for our peoples. And it's showing an increased sophistication in Native activities and projects, but also in more of an exercise of tribal jurisdictional muscle. In other words, these are governments saying, we had all of these powers before we signed the treaty. The Constitution did not specifically relieve us of those, therefore we still have those powers. And the U.S. Supreme Court has said, yes, you do. So that kind of gives you some feel for where things are happening. It's my job then to cover that growing sense of nationhood. And I think that is going to be a key phrase in the next few years among Native discussions is, yes, we can patrol and govern our own lands. We can set up a police force, a tribal court system, a jail if we need it, or anything else that will help us in our own self-determination. And you're seeing much more of that now, and sometimes it butts up against their neighbors who don't like the idea, or how come things aren't the way they used to be? You guys never speared fish before, but you're doing it now. How come? So those questions really create some conflict in some cases. What we like to do is share the more positive growth and results and try and eliminate that adversarial situation. Mm-hmm. Bingo and gambling is a good example where many states say we don't want it, it's for whatever reason, saying get it out of here. But when a tribe presses ahead and gets that operation going, and all of a sudden that economic ripple effect starts, then people start changing their tune. And the only reason those tribes could do it because of their sovereign political status. That's in some cases all they had left, but it works, and they're using that muscle and sophistication to build some stable economies, and things are changing now as they're pumping that money back into the reservation population. I think in one spot in Minnesota, the Little Six Bingo Palace, run by the Shakopee Sioux now, has given them enough money to pave all their roads, to build a new tribal clinic, and pay their membership per capita. And before that, all they had going for them was a landfill. And now it's, if you'll pardon the expression, it's wall-to-wall white-haired little old ladies in there, you know, pumping bingo stickers now. Mm-hmm. They're having a good time. They're winning incredible pots in some cases, but the tribe has now taken that self-determination and turned it into cash they can put in the bank. So, you know, things are changing. It is my delight to get to cover that and share that. But it's also my challenge then to explain it in such a way that anyone can understand.
But this is a question I want to ask you. You reach out to as many who are able to listen of 1.6 million Native Americans. But your coverage is far more vast than that, and you're reaching people who know very little about issues that are specific to Native America. How do you write a story? You write a story for the person who knows, or do you write a story for the rest of the world, or both?
Both, if you can. We understand that most of our neighbors really are products of a school system, educational system that has not dealt with our affairs, nor history in any accurate sense. So you get the ignorance which is out there, and I don't really fault anyone for being ignorant, I fault them for staying ignorant. With that kind of basis to work from, then we laughingly tell our reporters to write for the complete idiot. You know, that's a horrible oversimplification, but many of our own people don't even understand the complexities of the federal laws, 1,500 federal laws that govern our lives more than any other citizen. So how could you expect someone from, say, you know, New York City or D.C. or Minneapolis to understand that complexity without putting it in the most basic terms? And that's also the challenge in radio, because you have to write for that ear. Mm-hmm. Because you're competing with people driving to work or diapering the baby or fixing breakfast or, you know, coming home from the job. And if you don't really catch that ear, if you don't really zing them and they don't catch it and understand, then it's going to go one in one ear and out the other. And that's our challenge in radio news. But specifically in Native affairs, we have to put it in such a sense that we have to write kind of a headline sort of thing that will really draw people to us. And we design each newscast to give them some of the hard nuts and bolts kinds of things that we need to serve our people, plus perhaps some softer kind of more diverse coverage that would appeal to anyone and draw that interest in. We don't rely on anyone's sense of duty or anyone's guilt trip to listen to us. We want to be the best darn news service that has ever come out on Native American people, and as such, we have to have a very high caliber of production and writing and presentation. So we really have to bust our tails to make it really sound good so anyone will listen. And I have no grand illusions about shining this bright light over the nation and changing everyone's thinking, but that is my goal, eventually, to change the way people think about the nation's Native people, how our industry covers those issues, and how our people can be part of it. We have to tell our own stories with our own voices.
Gary Fife with us today on Conversations. I'm Susan McGinnis. My guest began his advanced education at Northeastern State College in Oklahoma. He interned through that college with a Native legislative monitoring agency in Washington, D.C. as a writer, photographer, and a reporter that turned into an 11-year job in Washington, D.C., writing for various publications. He graduated in 1973 with a B.A. in journalism from the University Without Walls at the Flaming Rainbow Center of Missouri's Westminster College. In Missouri's Westminster College. I'm Susan McGinnis. This is Conversations. I want to ask you about being an activist, being a journalist at the same time. Many people say about minorities, whether it's women, whether it's gay people, whether it's African Americans, whether it's Native Americans, that you cannot report on your own issues because you bring a natural bias of your race or your gender or your sexual orientation, whatever it is. Tell me why this is not accurate. Tell me why you can report fairly and objectively.
Well, you could raise the same question about white journalists reporting on white affairs.
But they never do.
Yeah, you know, we're, you know, so different. It's a field that, of course, I do have deep in my heart about wanting to be a sort of an activist in a sense, but I've been as a professional journalist for 21 years, and coming out of an activist kind of background, I was a campus radical sort of type during the civil rights movements then. But after being through several demonstrations where we got tear gassed or nightstick in the back of the head, or people were spitting and throwing crap at you, I decided that's not the way to get your message across because people don't listen to you. It's a knee-jerk reaction, and maybe that nightstick in the back of the head either knocked some sense into me or knocked it out, one of the two. But I'd always been interested in the field of journalism, and being a naturally curious person, I always wanted to ask questions and find out. And I decided, well, this is the way to go. If I can become part of this industry, maybe people will listen to us if I do the best job I can, if I can make them understand. And from that simple sort of way of looking at it, we've developed now into the service that we are now. But I see no problem at all for me as a professional in doing that. What I see actually is not a disadvantage, but an advantage, because I know I am a tribal person, but I have greater insight into what makes a tribe tick or how it might interact with its members or other tribes. Or after 11 years in Disneyland on the Potomac, I know how they deal with the government or not deal with the government. So a matter of bias or prejudice has never entered our minds. And actually, as I might have said before, we coach our reporters not to go white man bashing, because that's not the story. I don't do propaganda. I don't do advocacy. Mm-hmm. I do the best damn job I can in making that material understandable to anybody, and then let them make their own decisions, hopefully from an informed basis.
You do bring a different perspective to, say, a national news story than, say, NBC's national desk might. Mm-hmm. Do you also think that you raise issues that should come to the national attention but wouldn't otherwise if National Native News didn't find them?
Yes, absolutely. We try to keep our coverage as broad as possible. Many of the Native journalistic efforts in the past have tend to concentrate on some rather spectacular sorts of things like land claims or religious issues and things like that. By broadening our coverage to cover things like baby bottle tooth decay or the diabetes rate among our people or a growing sobriety movement, these are stories that we need to hear. We absolutely need to hear this kind of thing about ourselves. But the major networks think this is pretty much small potatoes. And they'd rather do the, you know, beautiful Navajo what rug weaver kind of thing mm-hmm. that everyone can relate to, they think. So the field is wide open. I mean, I can get as broad as I want, and we really actually enjoy getting as diverse or eclectic as possible, because that way people never know what we're going to do next, and they might tune in just to find out. Mm-hmm. And if they do, we've got them. But in getting back to that, we have to deal with these kind of things because no one is doing it. There's obviously the need, but we have a lot of fun in digging out that kind of material and presenting it in such a way that people go, wow, I didn't know that. Or, oh yeah, you know, the oh yeah stories, as we call them. Mm-hmm. I understand that. And since no one's really done it, I mean, we can get away with murder if we wanted to, of course, but it means that everything that we bring out in those kinds of areas is fresh. No one's ever heard it before, and they're really amazed to hear it and say, wow, you know, the Pueblo children are learning their own language by computer. You know, a computer metallic voice is teaching them their own language. You don't hear that on NBC or ABC or too much now. On, you know, before us, even an NPR, mm-hmm. but it's an incredible, it's like discovering a whole new universe there that's untouched, or perhaps what people felt like when they first saw Alaska. You know, this is brand new, it's untouched, we can do what we can with it. And we enjoy it. We occasionally will give Uncle Sam a little elbow in the rib cage, you know, or remind him that Custer lost at the Little Bighorn, or things like that. But primarily we try to fill those gaps for everyone, mm-hmm. and saying, well, the Navajos are the biggest tribe in the nation, but the most population of Native Americans is in Oklahoma. There are more Native Americans in Los Angeles in one spot than anywhere else on the planet. More after this. You know, and things like that, and we really enjoy doing that.
This is Gary Fife on Conversations. I want you to think as a journalist for me for just a moment. Your profession has come in for terrific criticism in recent years. Probably the last 5-8 years, there's been more journalist bashing than at any other time, at least in our lifetimes, yours and mine. From your particular perspective, because I think you do look at your field from a corner of the field, do you think that's fair? Is journalism slipping terribly? Or it's the political climate, or what?
I think everything actually figures in there, but I think the thing that really makes me feel very unsettled is a tendency of the major sources to go to a sensationalist magazine kind of thing. And you know, the hard copies and current affair kind of things that have incredible viewers. And I think that it's affected the decision-making process, where perhaps a slower moving story might get shoved aside to run out and cover the bloody car wreck, you know, and get the cameras in there and let's show some gore. Because it does attract people, it does affect ratings, ratings affect revenues. So I see that as a growing trend in our business, and I think newspaper readers, television viewers, and radio listeners are beginning to voice their dissatisfaction with that type of coverage, saying, fine, let those two shows do that kind of thing, but let's hear some real news here. We don't need this recounting of the tragedies over and over and over again, or the sexy scandals. You know, you heard tons of this thing about this Long Island Lolita thing, and you know, that story was you know, what do they call it? They dropped the charges down to assault, I think, something, a plea bargain. But you got blow-by-blow coverage. And issues of our Native concern are just, you know, out the window completely.
Is this kind of a national version of Beads and Feathers?
You mean the...
I mean, you've talked
those
about...
Those magazines?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice way to put it. I think that's a very good way to go. And it bothers me as a professional, someone who's really strived to do the kind of coverage that that is quality, that is something you can be proud of, and saying we didn't do the grime and crime kind of stories. You know, you really don't hear those in our service unless it's, you know, the chairman of the Navajos ripping off his tribe to the tune of $7 million, then we're going to do that story. But right. You know, we don't do the car wrecks or the rapes or that kind of thing unless it's obviously a personality or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think many Americans have legitimate gripes against our business because of that trend and people going for the quick, fast, sexy story rather than slower paced, kind of well-researched documentary kind of thing that may not be as flashy but is far more useful. You know.
Gary Fife's with us on Conversations today. I'm your host, Susan McInnes. When Gary left Washington, D.C., it was for Minneapolis, Minnesota, where he created a Native American radio magazine called First Person Radio, beginning in 1982. While he was in Minneapolis, he also created a public affairs television program, a live Native radio show, and edited the Minneapolis American Indian Center's newspaper. It was in 1987 that he was called by Alaska Public Radio Network to have the courage to create a 5-minute daily program concentrating on news called National Native News, and as they say, the rest is history. I don't want to leave the critique of the media yet until I ask you, do you think it's getting better? Is it getting worse?
Well, right now I have a bad feeling it's getting worse because more people are buying into this kind of thing. I'm not aware of what goes on here in Fairbanks. I've not seen the local coverage here, but I have a disconcerting feel for even in Anchorage. And in the larger cities in the lower 48, it's even worse. I had a wonderful opportunity to speak with many commercial TV news directors and people in Florida in a meeting a year ago, and they were really scared to death that this kind of thing would take hold and more people would buy into this coverage. And the way it looks, I'm afraid their fears were well grounded, because we're seeing a lot more of this kind of thing. The LA riots gave you horror story after horror story, and then Hurricane Andrew, and then the one in Hawaii, and then the earthquake, and a lot of the coverage concentrated on the pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. You saw some outstanding examples where they looked at the relief efforts and whether or not that worked or not, and how people were coping with it and helping each other, but that was the exception to the rule. And it was very disconcerting to see that sort of thing happening. And then, of course, these talk shows, of course, thrive on that sort of thing, the dysfunctional elements of our society.
Do you think if you add that to, see, I'm going to tell you that I have a sense of foreboding as well. If we add that to programs like Top Cops and, I don't know all the names of these things, but America's Most Wanted and things like mm-hmm. that, do you think that in this way the entertainment / sensational news end of the media kind of drives us apart? Poor neighborhood from rich neighborhood, Native American from white, female to male? I feel a wedge coming here. Do you sense that?
Yes, I would share that, because what they are emphasizing is the width of the gulf between those groups, and saying these people are the poorest of the poor, they're dirt poor, they're criminally poor. Mm. And then after that, there's a story on Rodeo Drive and all of these Mercedes and fancy cars and people who drop $1,000 for trifles, and really making people see the difference, the haves and the have-nots, I don't like to see it, and it doesn't make me feel very good to see news programs really devote that kind of time to it. And they're almost parasitic in their approach to it, saying, well, we're going to milk this story for everything it's worth. Mm-hmm. Get all the pain and suffering. Get right down in that woman's face and watch her cry. You see a lot more of this than you used to, and I think we've lost, for me, it would be a matter of taste and fairness, and I think some quality and ethical standards are being broached there that I could not find time for in my kind of coverage.
What's the answer? I mean, how to turn that around, or is it turnable?
I'm not sure. I think it's a lot bigger than either one of us have really assessed at the moment, and to reverse a trend like that would have to be a major reversal in the American public's thinking and viewing habits. People got disgusted with this stuff, with the Phils and Oprahs and Geraldos and all this other stuff. But those kinds of programs appeal to a sense of the human nature that we all have, and we can't really dislodge from ourselves. It's like that old saying, you drive by a car wreck and you just have to look. And that's essentially what these shows do. And then you might feel bad about it later on, but you're going to do it anyway. And many people just turn that into TV and say, let's go. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We'd have to walk a higher road, I think, in our own personal lives to maybe reverse that. I don't really see much of that changing at this point. I think people are actually seeing that it can be quite productive, shall we say, and not wanting to lose out on some good cash, some easy money, and that sort of thing.
Productive, lucrative.
Lucrative.
Yeah. This is Gary Fife on Conversations. You came up in the 60s, as did I, from both an activist's perspective and a professional's perspective. Is this a tougher time for an activist and a professional? Harder times. 60s were full of, at least in retrospect, strides, you know. Yes. The civil rights legislation actually was enacted. A war actually came to an end. The consciousness of a country for better and for worse was transformed. The 90s, mm-hmm. a harder time to be the activist and the professional? Or an easier time?
No, it's much harder. The economics of this nation have taken a drastic downturn over the last 12 years. I actually left Washington when the Republicans came in because I didn't see much fun there anymore, and unfortunately that turned into policies that affected our whole nation. We've been through some economic times here in this nation that have really pulled us apart and emphasized the differences in the haves and the have-nots, and most of us tend to be in that second category. And so when times get tougher, people get perhaps a little leaner and meaner, and it's harder to get people involved in larger social conscious kind of issues rather than the hard economics of putting a roof over your head and feeding your kids. And if you sit and ask yourself what's more important to me, to myself, then obviously the economics are going to be more important. Finding a job, keeping it, and finding some kind of future. Which means the activist sort of issues are been shoved aside, you know, as our minority groups have been superseded by the economically oppressed people. Everyone can be poor, it doesn't matter what color you are. You know, the color green is the most important part in that respect. So I think it is harder. And those who are still pursuing those kinds of courses are finding the going much tougher. So they're having to become more sophisticated in what they do and forge linkages in sometimes economic terms. I don't think you'll see much more of this stand in unity, brotherhood, bring down the capitalistic system kind of thing much more, particularly among Native Americans. As we see, we are unique political entities and we have a unique relationship with the United States. Our course is different than African Americans or Asian Americans or Hispanic and Latinos. Because we have a BIA, in other words, and they don't. Mm-hmm. So we have a way to go and deal with this, and we can work off of that. Plus, the sovereign status of reservations could help them build economic base. So we're beginning, perhaps, to pull back a little more, even from a pan-Indian kind of feel into a more tribal sense, and saying, well, we have to take care of this reservation right now. We have to put our own people to work. We can help other natives as it comes, and then maybe we'll stand in solidarity with the third world kind of thing. So it's going to be much tougher, and I think if you ask members of any minority group, they might share that kind of perspective, because if they can't get support to continue their activities, then do you stand back with an attitude, or do you take a job and, you know, feed your family? It's a hard one.
Gary Fife with us on Conversations. Gary has an award-winning radio show, 5 minutes daily, 10 minutes if you add a 5-minute feature that is put out for each of the radio shows. There have been awards on the national level for Gary in specific, beginning much prior to National Native News. He is the first ever Native American selected as a Ford Fellow in educational journalism. That was in 1978 and was by George Washington University. As a Ford Fellow, he was able to have nationwide travel and to do research to examine contemporary issues in Native American education. He served in a residency at National Public Radio in 1988, a much coveted residency for National Public Radio, and received a Certificate of Merit by the International Biographical Center of Cambridge in 1988. He's listed in the 13th edition of Men of Achievement. Gary Fife with us on Conversations here at KUAC-TV.
I see our marketing people have been very kind to me there.
This brings me to a subject I know you don't care to talk about too much, but about yourself as a role model. Something I read that intrigued me was on a visit to a reservation in New Mexico, there were Navajo youngsters who were surprised to find that you weren't a white man. Is it that on radio, only white people can be on radio in the minds of youngsters in New Mexico?
No.
What do you do to break that?
I mean, yeah, you have to be there, I think. It's a sad reflection on the state of the art, though, is that many of our people still expect someone else to be doing this. And we're so new, this has never been done before. Which brings me to part where, you know, this is our challenge, to change the speed in which news gets to and about Native people and to deliver those voices. But those kids, you know, they were charming youngsters there they came up to me and says, "You're Gary Fife?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "You are Indian, aren't you?" Well, there was a similar story out of North Dakota. People were listening to our service for some time, and then the local tribal newspaper ran a photo of me, and they were getting calls at a station and saying, "My God, I thought this was a little white man." You know? It's kind of funny, but as I say, you know, there just hasn't been any numbers of Native Americans in the business. And if there were, they were camera people or behind the scenes kinds of things where you didn't get that presence, and a consistent presence was unheard of. So they were quite surprised when, you know, they found out that I was, you know, Native. I was an Oklahoma guy. I used to talk like this before I got into radio, you know, and fun things like that.
Were you very Southern?
Well, in Oklahoma, that part of Oklahoma, I didn't play it up too much, but I'm proud to say I'm descended from Stan Waite, who was the last Confederate general to surrender. He was a full-blood Cherokee on my mother's side. Huh. So my younger brother says I sound like a Yankee now. But no one knew what to think. And what's a Native American journalist supposed to look like? What are they supposed to sound like? You know, I could do anything. But they were surprised, really, to find that Native was in control of the program, wasn't just a window dressing on the set type, and that we made the decisions, we called the shots. It was my voice that was on there every day, and that I could perhaps deal with a regional accent and deliver news in a high caliber kind of format, something that they listen to as news and not just this Native show.
Window dressing, pretty boy with good hair.
You got it. Yeah. You know, the wind in his hair kind of syndrome is what we kind of call it sometimes.
Right.
But, you know, they were really surprised because, in a sense, radio was not part of their culture. You know, traditionally, but in the sense of a contemporary society is very much a part of our culture. You know, you grew up listening to radio, everyone did. Even in the 30s and 40s, people sat in the living room and watched the radio. I mean, Green Hornet, you know, the Bickersons, Amos and Andy, you know, you were entranced and mesmerized by what you heard. So many of our people grew up with that. And what I call it, it's just our oral tradition that has come full circle. Because most tribes did have a camp crier or a messenger or some person or group who delivered the news that the people needed to know. And that's the way I see my job, is to deliver the best news I can, the most accurate material I can, and let them decide. And as a role model now, I have to wear that mantle now. It bothers me sometimes that I have to carry this sort of responsibility, because there are about that many of us doing this kind of thing, and maybe that many nationally. Mm-hmm. There are 21 tribal stations now, but there was a local kind of community-based offerings and programmings. Much of it is a Native language, I'm thankful to hear. But it deals with them, and what we provide is the kind of service that they cannot afford to do themselves. I mean, our phone budget alone would break most of the tribal stations. But we found the money and support to do it because, you know, because of the awards and the quality and the audiences we serve. Mm-hmm. We've got very nice people who give money to some of the biggest journalistic efforts in the business. You know, we are very proud to see MacArthur Foundation or Robert Wood Johnson or Northwest Area, and we've had many Native corporations come in. But that kind of support shows us that we are needed and that people will pay attention to us. And if we have to be the role models and saying, you can be part of this business, you don't have to be a hairspray jockey to, you know, to do the news, then they're more accepting and they're more trusting. And then we've seen as a side benefit, a lot of our young people now look to this field as a career. And it wasn't my idea to be a role model or this, you know, trailblazing kind of thing. What I wanted to do was the news and see what would happen. Mm-hmm. I never had any idea at all that we would be this successful at it.
Good
so
idea.
So I, you know, I wear it and see it as a useful tool. It has to be done, a function that has to be performed. And if the Creator has blessed me to allow me to do it, then so be it, and I'll do the best job I can.
There's another question about role models that I want to put to you. I've heard people make very logical, very well-grounded arguments that a role model does not need to be a Native American for Native American kids, a woman for a woman, African American for black kids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but that any adult should be able to guide any kid towards that youngster's potential. Do Native kids in New Mexico need to hear a Native man on the radio, see Hattie Kaufman on the television, or can anybody model potential for everybody?
I'm not sure that'll work. Might I add Conroy Chino from Albuquerque in that very nice list of people you have. So they can actually see someone on television. Very much a Native man, Pueblo man, I believe. And of course the Hattie Kaufmans and others like that. We can enjoy the work of other people and saying, gosh, you know, Connie Chung was good, or you know, Brokaw or Jennings or Rather, whatever your tastes run. So yeah, that's really good. Someday I'd like to kind of do that. But then when you see someone from your own group, from your own people there, you're saying, right on, all right, we can do this. It does wonders for your heart. I mean, you just are so happy to see another member of your ethnic group succeed in an area where there aren't very many of us who have succeeded. It just feels so good to say, yeah, Hattie, go, come on, kick some tail. Mm-hmm. And they don't have her just on Native Stories. She does consumer affairs, which affect us all because we're all consumers. And so she's not boxed in, and she's doing a terrific job. I mean, her work stands up with anybody's, and so does Chino's or whoever else. I mean, we're glad to say we put 4 national awards on our wall. We feel some of that enthusiasm from our listeners at National Native News, and it makes our day. Believe me, that is our Pulitzers, that is our Peabodys, our mm-hmm. Tonys, our Oscars. All awards rolled into one when we can hear somebody saying, you know, I heard that service last night, you guys really did a good job. Mm-hmm. We don't get much of that feedback, obviously, being in Alaska from our own people down there, so it is really nice when we hear it. But I think you can learn from people. I mean, I've got a lot of teachers and people I've known in my own history that were not Native Americans that impressed me, and it showed me many things that could be done in overcoming hardships or taking advantages of natural talent. But I have to admit, every time I see Hattie on CBS, I'm thinking, that's the top of the business in anybody's book. And there she is, and she's holding her own. God, go for it, girl.
She's a role model for you in some ways, out in front of you, saying, come on.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I mean, mm-hmm. CBS News in a regular spot on a morning program like that is the goal of any journalist, I think, mm-hmm. or those wanting to look that way. And that's the top of the business. That's where you get the best bucks, the best assignments, the best support, the best opportunities is at the network kind of level. But it's tough, and it is not an easy place to survive. And to see her still there after years and years and years and doing some very good work mm-hmm. just impresses the heck out of me. And a lot of people ask me about when am I going into television. I said, what for? You got Hattie Kaufman and Conroy Chyna. In radio, I can dress any way I want, you know. That's the way I feel about it. You know, if you know, young people come up to me and say, you know, I want to learn to do what you do, then I'm feeling like I've done my job. Yeah. And in the last couple of years, I admit I've seen a couple of young people out there that just scare the dickens out of me. They're going to be after my job in a couple of years. Hopefully 20 years of experience will still count for something by then, but we're
we'll
seeing
the old dog at the door too soon, huh?
Yeah, he can still growl and bite if he needs to.
You've said that a successful Native person is an amphibian, able to swim in the water and walk on the land at the same time, able to walk in a Native culture and walk in the white world at the same time. When you are walking and swimming in those worlds, do you feel as if you are striding ahead, or is there some, I have to ask this differently, I'm sorry. I have, among Native friends, people who say that that is a painful experience, standing in one world and in the other, but not at any point in just one world. Is that all a striding, joyous experience, being an amphibian? Because I know it opens lots of doors for you. Or is there some pain that you are neither one nor the other?
Well, you do have some downside to it, but for me it's a matter of pride. I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can go home to my own people. I know what clan I am. I don't speak that much of the language, but I can enough to greet my elders and get myself fed. You know, I ain't bad. And go home and know what a stomp dance is and how to participate or go to a powwow and sit around my friends and tell what we call Indian jokes. And they just have a good time or understand what a ceremony is about, or you should be respectful to your elders. I'm proud that I can do that, or I can come to NPR and sit down on the national desk and discuss my ideas intelligently with Carl Castle or Art Silverman or Lynn Neary, all of whom are friends of mine now, and be respected for what I am, a professional journalist, not just this Indian guy who happens to be in radio. It just tickles me sometimes that I can do this. And
does
I look at
them. Does it have to do with Gary Fife feeling that you know who you are and that you're a success no matter by whose standards?
Yeah. I mean, I've had some adversity in my career and life that part of it was personally developed, others of it was outside influences, but I survived it. And what I like to remind myself is I didn't quit. I stuck it out. I took everything that society was going to throw at me, including some physical assault. And I'm still here, and I'm still here, and here, mm-hmm. and I'm still the same person. I can remain a member of the Muscogee Creek Nation, or I can be a national radio journalist. I can do both. How many other people do you know that can? Even among in the station here, who could exist in both worlds like that? Mm-hmm. Now my worlds are much broader now as I've traveled to other tribes and learned to understand other cultures and things like this. So I think I'm just getting better at what I do, and if I can share that, and perhaps in an enthusiastic way, and make people think and feel better about being able to do this, or maybe have them give it one more shot, take a deep breath and try it again, then I think I'm successful as a quote role model unquote. Mm-hmm. But it's not easy and it's not a popularity contest, because there are people in this state now who have actually criticized some other Native people in this business and saying, what are you trying to become, more of a Gussock, more of a white man? And for me, that's a cheap shot, because I think these people should be behind them and saying, It's just another tool we're adapting to our own use. There's no reason in the world that I couldn't walk behind the camera over there and do it, and actually I probably could. I've done some editing too. Mm-hmm. There's no reason, there's no racial barrier there, and I can still remain Gary Fife, or whoever, Yupik, or Inupiaq, or Inupiaq, or Athabascan. That doesn't change me. I can do both, can you? Mm-hmm. And so I think if people think about the advantages they have and the abilities to understand both the tribal society and the more individualistic general society, then they have a distinct advantage, although it doesn't seem like it in many cases. You have to work harder, you have to strive harder, you have to take more stupidity from society in some cases. But when those kinds of things change, then you get more pats on the back from your own people and society. I think for us it can be hard because so many people don't want you to succeed. They think, he'll be here for a few days and then he'll get drunk and go off somewhere else, and we know he's going to fail. Mm-hmm. And many of the programs and things, projects aimed at natives were designed like that. They were designed to fail. But when natives took charge and began to exercise that self-determination, those projects began to work and people became involved. It's the same way with our business. In other words, to change the episodic coverage, we have to be part of this business. We have to be up there in that booth punching buttons. We have to be hosts. We have to be camera people. We have to be the development fundraisers. And we also have to be faithful viewers and listeners also, or else it's all for nothing. So we've got a lot of that facing us now. For me, if I must wear that mantle, then, and people were saying, right on, go ahead, or glad to meet you, then it is kind of hard personally because I'm not that kind of person inside. I'm a little uncomfortable with being under the spotlight in many cases, but someone has to do it. You know, mm-hmm. It's a tough job, dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. And looked at to a time when there may be competition, a lot of other people doing this sort of thing, then it'll be my job to be a whole lot better than they are. Mm-hmm. And if I can still work with our crew and be that leading edge and still be the best in the business, then that's my goal.
You know, it's an interesting thing that I've been listening to you do in the last few minutes. You have been describing, in some ways, the life of Gary Fife, that is to say, the microcosm, a complex human being reflecting all his complexities in the world and inside himself successfully, that amphibian we've talked about. In the beginning of this program, you talked about transforming the perception of the world regarding Native people from an undifferentiated Indian to the complexity that it really exists, all the tribes, all the people. Is this kind of the same effort for one Indian man, one Cherokee Creek man, as it is for an entire nation of people?
Oh boy.
The self-perception and the external perception to differentiate itself?
I'm not sure I can really answer that. For me, it is absorbed a lot of energy and perhaps to the extent where I might not have as broad a picture, general picture, as I might have. For those kind of changes and things to happen, though, we have to have these, quote, role models, unquote. We have to have these things happen. And I'm not sure I'm actually really answering your question mm-hmm. there, but
I guess I just wonder if it is the same effort for one man as it is for a nation mm-hmm. to see its complexity, to behave as if it's truly a complex entity.
Yeah, it is easier for a single person, obviously. I think sure, numerically is easier, but to understand Gary might be a lot easier than it would be to understand the Oglala Sioux Nation, perhaps. There's so many people, but what you have to perhaps keep in mind is that diversity is immense. We have the complete range of political spectrum, you know, left-wing, liberal, democratic, blah, 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 and then hardcore conservative, Republican, fiscally responsible, blah, blah, blah. We have a lot of people in the middle that don't give a damn, and then others who just kind of this way and that or think that don't affect us. So we have all of that. We have Native Americans who are wonderful, outgoing, warm people, and we also have some hardcore racists. Sad to say, it's true. So we're trying to put across that diversity doesn't allow you to really think in terms of a single unified kind of voice. And even Congress right now, our wonderful supporter Daniel Inouye still thinks we need one unifying voice to do it. And somehow it just hasn't sunk in that, wait a minute, we got 350 federally recognized tribes. I think the best you're going to do is get regions that agree. You know, people of the desert might want a lot more water. People of the Northwest might be concerned with logging issues. Alaska might be, you know, obviously is oil development and preservation issues. And to recognize that diversity, I think, is the important part. And with that acceptance, then becomes easier to understand a nation rather than a single person. Obviously, I'm not what I appear to be in your first impression. I've got a lot more going on between my ears than most people understand. But it's the same way with a tribe, whether it's the Navajos or Creeks, Cherokees or Seminoles or Mohawks or, you know, Onondagas or Ojibwe. That complexity must be accepted first. And phrases like "the Indians want" don't hold any water. You might say the Ojibwe Nation of the White Earth Reservation wants more logging, but the Red Cliff Band doesn't. So you got both Ojibwes, and who are you going to say the Indians want what? So you have to accept that and say, hey, you've got a patchwork quilt here. They have many things in common. They're all part of the quilt, but they're all different little patches, different colors, different sizes, different designs. And understand that what Athabascans might want is not the same as what Inupiaqs want. You know, obviously, you can use Anwar as a very good illustration. You have people lined up on both sides of that issue. Some say you should not harm Mother Earth, you should not take the blood out. Others say, you know, we've got to put our people to work. This thing works, and we've not destroyed, you know, the environment or whatever. Others say you could change the caribou. That's obviously an emotional issue, and I'm sure listeners right now are just beginning to line up on both sides of it, even at my mention of it. But if you understand that we've got that diversity, then a greater perception and comprehension of our people will follow.
And this is the news you'll hear every day on National Native Dudes.
Try.
Gary, we've come to the end of our hour. Thanks much. As I say, you can hear National Native News on KUAC FM daily, and you'll be listening to the voice of Gary Fife, our guest today on Conversations. Thanks much, Gary.
Pleasure. I enjoyed that.
Good. I hope you'll join me again next week.